Leaders are all around us, at all times and in every area of our lives. They motivate. They risk the first step. But what motivates a leader? In our Central Texas Leadership Series, we talk to local leaders who guide and inspire to find out what makes them tick. In this episode, William McGovern, Vice President of the Waco Mammoth Foundation. Nan Holmes leads the conversation that was recorded on April 9th in the KWBU studio.
I'm Nan Holmes, and today I'm visiting with William McGovern, a real community leader in every sense of the word. Bill, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Nan.
First, I want to go back, as far as you can remember, about your early days. Where did you grow up? Tell me a little bit about your beginnings.
Well, I'm not a Texan, although I've been here for a number of years. I was raised in Miami, Florida. And so my early youth was on the beach. A lot of sand, a lot of sun. We've got the sun in Texas, and we have sand, but we're missing the water ingredient here in Waco. Mm-hmm. So that was my early childhood in Miami.
And where did you go to school?
I went to school. I went to the University of Florida Atlantic University in mm-hmm. Boca Raton. And I was a physics major and got my degree there. And subsequent to that, I went to graduate school there.
Well, tell me who was really the person or persons who influenced you so much early on.
Well, of course, you got to give credit to your parents. And they certainly were inspirational in the sense they gave me a strong work ethic. And strong character, and those are two qualities I think you need in a leader of any sort, be it community leader, business leader, whatever. But they instilled those two qualities in me. And then I had a couple, I could call them unconventional sources. One was a book, and one was a group of friends.
Wow. Tell us about it.
Well, the book is a book written by Alfred Lansing called Endurance. And it was a book about an ill-fated Antarctic expedition in 1915, 1916. And the first time I read the book in my teens, it was a marvelous story about a crew trapped on the ice in Antarctica and how this Ernest Shackleton managed to save them. And again, I read it in my teens. I said, that's an amazing book, an amazing story. Well, a few years later, I reread it and said, it's more than that. Here's a man that took care of his crew, had objectives set, changed objectives, knew how to use his people, and was really a story about leadership. And that's the book that influenced me. And so that was a heavy influence. And when I looked at it and thinking about leadership, I read it a couple times, bits and pieces. But later on, I found out that I wasn't the only one to take this view of the book. The Harvard Business School uses this as a case study for leadership. Hmm. And so I guess I'm not alone. It may not be so unconventional after all.
Well, what about the friends?
The friends, another unconventional source. I was brought into a group of friends, a half a dozen friends, and I was probably looked upon a little like a baby brother. Most of these people were older than I am. And we would go to various places, generally South America, and we'd mountain climb and raft, and those were many expeditions. These friends crossed the spectrum, but they were very accomplished people. One was a vice president of A&T. One was a retired Green Beret colonel. There was a hugely successful entrepreneur, a mayor of a city, couple attorneys, managing directors, and I got to look at them and examine their methods and how they did things. And it was very informative, even though it wasn't in a business environment. They weren't a mentor in a business sense, but I learned exactly what they did, how they set objectives, details, priorities, how they delegated. And it was, as I say, an unconventional source, but it was a good source.
Well, it's to your credit you paid attention, because I think sometimes we're exposed to real leadership and we sort of forget that this is something important we need to take in. We just don't realize the importance of these encounters with people who are true leaders and really influence our lives later on. So tell me the story of how you came to Texas and then on to Waco.
Well, I was in graduate school studying physics at Florida Atlantic University, and an opportunity came up to join a global oil field service company in Houston. And I accepted that position and moved to Houston, moved to Texas. And that was in 1977, so I'm transplanted since 1977. I did this, however, with the full intention of returning to graduate school, which I still have that intention.
Oh, don't we all have that story? And so you went to Houston, you spent time there in a real variety of leadership positions. And were you involved in the community there in Houston?
I really wasn't. I was traveling, doing a lot of traveling in Houston, plus the fact that in Houston I lived in Houston, but quite frankly, 14 years in the oil field service business, I moved 11 times.
Wow.
And both domestically and internationally. So I didn't really have a chance to become involved in the community. After 14 years of doing that, I was then recruited away by another company, and mm-hmm. I got to settle down a bit.
Yeah. And so then what brought you to Waco?
Well, while I was in Houston, I met and married my wife, Nancy. And that was my first step to Waco. She's fifth generation Wacoan, so that qualifies as old Waco.
Mm-hmm.
So when her father started getting on in age and needed taking care of, we weren't pleased with Houston traffic and a number of reasons, and we decided that we would move to Waco and take care of him. Now, as I said earlier, I was not really involved with the community in Houston, but Nancy, she kept her fingers in the pie, so to speak, and was active with the junior league there.
Mm-hmm. And so you both came to Waco. Well, one thing you brought with you was the love of music, because you served on the lyric, well, you still do, on the Lyric Opera Board and the Waco Symphony Board. You were the president of the Symphony Board at one time.
Yeah, the opera, when we first moved here in 2000, the Lyric Opera of Waco was still an ongoing concern, but it has since, and I was served on the board, it lasted four or five seasons. But operas are very expensive in a city this size. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult to finance a production like that. So that was my first community service in Waco. And one of the things I like about Waco very much is that a single person can make a difference. And that's what I was trying to do. If you make a place your home, I think it's incumbent upon you to give back to that community, and hence my community service.
So were you always interested in music, or did you just wanted to help these organizations?
I was always interested in music. It goes way back to early childhood. I can remember listening to a classical music concert in when I was 12. Mm-hmm. And I still remember the pieces played. And I walked out of there, and it was my first experience with a live classical performance. And I said, wow, that's for me. If I had some talent, I probably would have been a musician. But no talent.
Well, you know, I'm so curious. What was the performance?
Well, it's an all Beethoven concert.
Oh, yeah.
And they played, to this day, one of my favorite pieces, which is the Beethoven Violin Concerto, Opus 61. So I love the piece, and it endeared itself to me, and it's carried me through to this point. And as you said earlier, yes, I was after the Lyric Opera Board, I went on to be elected to the Waco Symphony Board, and that is a gem of an organization. And I was fortunate enough to be president of that.
Oh, yeah.
Let me tell you, people in Waco ought to be proud of the Waco Symphony.
Yes, and I remember Stephen Hyde, one time we were doing Pledge together, and I asked him what was his favorite composer, and he said Beethoven.
He you did. Know me? Okay.
So I couldn't resist asking him that question, because all the music he must see and perform, I just wanted to know. And really, it's that will lift you up out of your chair or cause you to just sit and enjoy it. He's just amazing music. And my friend Joni Livingston said one time, would any music today have the endurance of classical music such as Beethoven, Mozart? And I don't know if the answer to that, but classical music, as evidenced by our morning broadcast, is still very vital.
Absolutely. And, yeah, we'll know 200 years from now the answer, whether music being composed today will have the legs to last that long.
Yeah. And you shared with me that you're involved with Big Bend National Park, that's serving you well with some of the things we'll talk about later, but that Big Bend is something very dear to me. My husband is a botanist, and we've made many trips there. And it's just the most beautiful, amazing piece of nature that I never knew about till I went there the first time. And what I said to my husband was, the aliens didn't go to Red Rock. They came to Big Bend because it just seemed like almost mystical. It was just beautiful, beautiful place. And my friend Larry Brumley has served. I think he might be serving with you on this conservancy board.
Yeah, the Big Bend Conservancy, which was renamed from Friends of Big Bend National Park, is a philanthropic group that supports Big Bend. And yes, everything you say about Big Bend is absolutely true. I'm always shocked when Texans tell me they haven't been to Big Bend, and I'm shaking my head because you're missing a very interesting, very spectacular part of the state, of the country. On Larry Brumley, we do not serve together, but he went off the board about a year before I came on, but we've had interaction since, and we have a retreat. The board has a retreat every other year, and he generally shows up at the retreat. And so we talk about Waco and all the people in Waco and who's doing what to whom.
Well, I know he has a great love. We shared that love for Big Bend. We shared lots of for public broadcasting because he was a huge cheerleader for public broadcasting. But that's one thing I was always trying to find out what was going on. And he really means to this day a lot to this station, and we are indebted to him. If you're just joining us, I'm Nan Holmes, and this is KWBU Central Texas Leadership Series, and I am visiting today with Bill McGovern, a community leader extraordinaire. Now we want to talk about something that's new in your life, or would you like to back it up a little bit? Or?
Yeah, I'd just like to comment about Wakoans.
Sure.
In Big Bend Conservancy, we raised money, $1.5 million, to build the first new exhibit in Big Bend National Park in 50 years. At that $1.5 million, I actually had a fundraiser at my house. 80 Wacoans showed up to support and donate to this exhibit. And it's the generosity is just great. And Wacoans, that's only one aspect of their generosity. We had a gala out there in the park. We took over the entire restaurant, and 20% of the people there were from Waco. I mean, Houston, Dallas, they had three or four. Austin, three or four. San Antonio, all these major cities, and Waco, we had 15 to 20% of the people there, and they donated to the park. And I really have to thank them because they're great. So next time you're in Big Bend, Nan, you go by the dinosaur exhibit, the fossil trail exhibit.
Where you go in the main gate?
You go through the main gate and you keep going down the road. And just before you get to Panther Junction, on the left is the fossil exhibit. And you need to go there because...
Oh, I'm ready to go.
And it makes you proud to be a Wacoan.
Well, you know, I... always remember at the window, there's a little exhibit there that says, if you see a mountain lion, he's been watching you for hours, or I'm paraphrasing, but that really stuck in my mind. I'm like, oh my goodness, that I did not know that, and I'll be more careful when I'm roaming around the park. And then one time we had a really funny thing happen. I was sitting in a Baylor truck. My husband taught at Baylor, and he was in talking to the ranger, and this guy sticks his head through the truck window and said, seen any bears today? So there are quite some characters out there at the park. Well, let's talk about your newest endeavor, which you haven't abandoned any of the others. You've just added one own, and that is the Mammoth Site. And you... I know about National Park Service from the Big Bend.
Yeah, I was requested, asked to be on the board of the Waco Mammoth Foundation, probably mostly because that I did have experience dealing with the National Park Service in Big Bend and have an idea of how they work. Not totally, but a little, a little inkling on how they work. And Waco... In 2015, the Waco National Monument was signed into being by President Obama, and it's the 408th unit of the National Park Service. And this is a very remarkable feat to make that happen. And secondly, Wacoans, once again, should be very proud. Inside their city limits, they have a national monument.
Yes, and it's not just a little dinky monument either. It's very interesting. I took a group from my church, the seniors. I did the senior ministry, and they really loved it. Even though there was some walking involved, they were just in awe of the whole setup there.
Yeah, it's a fantastic unit of the National Park Service. The money raised came from the community to build this. It's somewhat jokingly called a park in a box because it was raised, the money raised came from private sources. They built the shelter, the dig shelter where the fossils are. And this was presented to the National Park Service as a complete set. And here it is. And they deemed it worthy of national significance, and hence its designation as a National Park National Park unit.
You know, I think of Gloria Young. She was an early adopter to the idea of this and really had worked tirelessly to make it a reality.
Yes, Gloria did a fantastic job. Actually, I'm a little hesitant to start naming names only because I'm going to leave one off.
Well, that always happens.
I just know it's going to happen.
just comes to mind when I think.
But it is. She did a fantastic job, and the people that came after her did a fantastic job, both in the community and the civic, the mayors and the city managers, and made this happen. So.
Well, you know, Waco really embraced this, and KWBU did a little documentary that is in the Mayburn, because we thought, I mean, the people here who were in charge thought this was a great opportunity. And so, again, Joni Livingston produced, and you can see it in the Mayburn, the little documentary. And it's something that can, you know, what child doesn't like dinosaurs? And then that's a part of that goes on with you all your life.
Well, educationally, there's educational outreach done by the site. They have school tours. I think something like 12,000 participants went through the site last year, school groups. And it's there for the kids, for the next generation to learn, to get their interest in science up, and to hopefully keep a interest in learning for life.
And what a story. I mean, it's just a truth is stranger than fiction. The whole story of this herd that perished here and and all the detective work, what happened to them. It's really an interesting story for all ages.
Absolutely. And again, there's those that have not been there, you need to go. It's just a fantastic place. They've left the dig shelter. There's, I believe, 7 in situ fossils of mammoths there. The rest of the fossils that have been dug out of the ground are resident in the Mayburn in storage, mm-hmm. actually, which will eventually be turned over to the National Park Service.
Oh, that's great. What a wonderful partnership between Baylor and the mammoths.
Well, yeah, the partnership is key to all this. The park unit is comprised of 4 partners: Baylor University, City of Waco, National Park Service, and the Waco Mammoth Foundation. The Waco Mammoth Foundation is the philanthropic arm. We can ask for money, so please join the Waco Mammoth Foundation, where entities like the city can't go out and ask you for money. The National Park Service can't go ask you for money. So we fulfill that function with the mammoth site. So, and we've kicked off a membership campaign this year to get more people in the community involved. And it's a great thing to be there, and please join.
Well, when you say membership, do you go to the website if you want to support it, or how do you do that?
Yes, you can go to the website, and it's wacomammothfoundation.org, and you can join there. And membership's as little as $25 on up. And with each level of membership, you get slightly different benefits of membership. The as you go up in dollar amounts, you have discounts to the Mayburn, discounts to the zoo. We've worked with Dallas Paleontological Society. So at certain levels, you will be invited on their digs. Mm-hmm. We also have private viewings at the Mayburn. We're at the very highest level. We will bring you up and show you the fossils in storage. Most people don't get to see, but we'll have a private showing for people.
Wow,
at that
that's
level.
Wonderful. And back to the dig, wasn't it one man who just kept working away at it and working away beginning?
Yes. There was Ralph Benson, and he was I think he mm-hmm. dug at the site for 30 years. But also Calvin Smith, who was I guess it was called the Strecker at that point mm-hmm. in time, the Strecker Museum. He was instrumental in tinning the site, making sure that rain, the weather, didn't destroy the fossils there.
He had a lot of projects, Calvin did, that are—
He did.
Maybe people don't understand that he kept them going until they built the big museum and all that.
That's right.
He saved a lot of things.
He did, and— we have the 10th anniversary of the public opening of the site is this year.
Oh, my goodness. It doesn't seem that long.
Yeah, it's been open 10 years. It was opened December 2009, and the Waco Mammoth Foundation is going to have a fundraiser on the 10th anniversary. Plans for that are still underway, but it is going to be a fundraiser where a happy birthday party.
Oh, I love that idea. And so that's – you're in – give me a little vision for the future. What – if you're a member, what will be your goal? If you...
Well, and that's exactly what we're working on right at this moment. How to – what's this park going to look like 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now? The four partners, the Waco Mammoth Foundation, Baylor, the City of Waco, and the National Park Service all got together last year and spent a week behind closed doors trying to sort out a strategic plan. We got a strategic plan in place now, and from that we're going to have to go down and work out the details of what has to happen. But the strategic plan, one of the areas of the strategic plan that everybody agreed on was visitor enhancements. Now, what that means and what that turns out to mean in terms of structures or services are to be determined, but that is on the list.
Well, that's very, very interesting that you have a strategic plan. Did you bring some of your skills from your many years of working when you helped with the strategic plan?
Yes, there were from the foundation. There were, I think, there was four of us. There was four from Baylor, four from the National Park Service, and four from the City of Waco. We got together in the room and we discussed the needs and wants of the site and what each partner could bring to that. And one of the things I'd like to stress is that this is, one, a community park, that the community built this. And secondly, there's these four entities trying to work together, understanding how each other's, the nuances behind each organization and how to make that work for the betterment of the park.
And how... just describe where, in case there's always someone who maybe just came to Waco, doesn't know about the park, describe the location.
The location's out Steinbeck Bend Road. It's on the western side. It borders the Bosque River on one end. There's about 105 acres of land. The NPS, the National Park Service, owns 5 acres, which includes the dig shelter. We've been... The surrounding 100 acres are there as city-owned property right now. And we've done some things to enhance that. We've had a couple Boy Scout troops build some trails. We've got a master naturalist who is going to give tours and talk about the flora and fauna of the area.
Wow.
Not the flora and fauna from 65,000 years ago, but current flora and fauna. Mm-hmm. So... and again, we're looking to the future. What are we going to do next? And that's...
Well, you know, that's one of the things I think about leadership is the ability to look to the future. You can get so bogged down in the day-to-day minutiae that you can't get that vision for the future. And that's why strategic planning is so important.
Well, I heard a park superintendent just the other day when I was in Austin. He used the term tyranny of the day, and I like that, so I'm going to plagiarize that.
For all the people who work for nonprofits out there, they can understand that language. Well, Bill McGovern, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a pleasure to talk with you. Any parting words you'd like to have for our audience?
Well, just say that if Waco's your home, that's great because we all love Waco. You just have to give back to the community. That's important. It's a two-way street. If you want Waco to be better, you give to that community. And please join the Waco Mammoth Foundation.
Well, that's good advice for all of our listeners. Again, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
This and past episodes are archived on our website at kwbu.org under the Programs tab.